This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Welcome back to the Financial Sense News Hour, everybody. Jim Poplava, John Loeffler here with you. This is the part of the program we call The Big Picture, in which we try to take a lot of the data points that are going on out there and make sense of what you see happening. Well, next week, Fed Chair Janet Yellen will be on Capitol Hill for her semi-Humphrey Hawkins testimony. And what they're going to be looking for is they want to see if the Fed is going to be consistent about what they said about raising interest rates and reducing their balance sheet. Now, we spent a lot of time here on the program following what the Fed says, and there's a reason for that, and we're going to deal with that today. Much of what happens in this market, this economic recovery that we have seen, has all been driven by the actions of the central bank and liquidity. And now, voila, they are in the process of taking that away.
You know, this is something that I think needs to be emphasized, John, and it's very important because if you take a look at this market recovery, which began really in March of 2009, it's been driven mainly by central banks. Can you say, has it been robust economic growth? No, we haven't seen 4, 5, 6% economic growth, which is typical of what you see coming out of a recession. We haven't seen that. So what has been the consequence of what the Fed has done and other central banks? Well, number one, they've driven interest rates to the lowest point in 5,000 years of human history. And they've driven rates on many bonds still today and on cash to negative. There are still a good portion of sovereign bonds out there, shorter term more so today than longer term, where you would have to pay the government to loan them money. So they've driven the rate on cash down to nothing. Just go to the bank and see what you get. They've also been enabling deleveraging to occur, whether it's been in the housing industry or the financial industry. They've also allowed consumers, corporations, to repair their balance sheets. If you're a bank and you were sitting on mortgages from a home that was upside down, you had a loss. As real estate prices have come back up, now you're back in the black again on those loans. So balance sheet repair has taken place. But also by keeping interest rates low, they've allowed leverage to build up in the financial system, and they have pushed up asset prices to the second highest that we've seen. What is really important to start to grasp here, just as this monetary recovery has been, some call it the new normal, it has not been normal in any sense of the word. In fact, the last 40 years have not been normal. So when central banks are saying, look, we've done this for 9 years, now we are going to be changing what we're doing going forward. We know at some point this market, this economy is going to be impacted by this, because that is eventually, as they withdraw liquidity, they're going to begin to put pressure on the markets as this liquidity is taken away, as the Fed begins to shrink its balance sheet. Because eventually, as they have told us, assuming they're going to keep to their time schedule, they're going to start at a rate of $10 billion a month, and every quarter they're going to raise it to $10 billion until finally, in 9 months, they plan on shrinking their balance sheet $30 billion a month. Now, $360 billion a year is equivalent to almost a 1% increase in the Fed funds rate. So they are now using two tools. They are raising interest rates, which is causing the prime lending rate to go up, mortgage rates to go up, and they are also now going to be not rolling over their debt, which means there's going to be less Federal Reserve buying of mortgage-backed securities and treasury securities. And what do we know about basic economics? If there's less money coming in to buy things, the price of those things will have to go up, meaning interest rates will have to go up to make them more attractive.
Okay, so what we're saying here, at least what I'm hearing you say, let me see if I can repeat this. The market basically, which has gone up for 9 years, has been mainly driven by central bank policy. And this is key, because if that's the factor that's driving it up, they're changing their policy right now. The market has not gone up because of economic fundamentals or other things which have driven markets up in the past. So I guess the real great question is, are you then telling me that this is the end of this bull market? Are we turning down into something else?
No, I don't think it's over, but I still think it has further to run. But we're probably more likely, in my opinion, transitioning from the early acceleration phase of an economic recovery. And granted, this has not been a great economic recovery. We have yet to see the 3%, 4% economic growth rates that the Fed was projecting when it first began quantitative easing and when they drove interest rates down to zero. The best we've ever done is about 2.5%, and we're tracking roughly about 2%, which is normally about half the recovery rate in an economic recovery. But we are in the latter stages of this business cycle. We're going into year 9, both for the recovery and for the bull market. So what this means or implies, you still want to be invested in stocks. In fact, the yield on many stocks today are still much higher than what you're going to find in the sovereign bond market, especially with so many sovereign bonds still offering next to nothing in yield, and many of them still offering negative yields if you want to park your money there. So what it does imply, however, with PE multiples this high and prices this elevated, that the gains going forward are unlikely to be as great as the double-digit gains that we've been experiencing most of these years of this recovery for the last 9 years. So another way of looking at this, you still want to party, you still want to dance and be on the dance floor, but you better start keeping an eye towards the exit door.
So given all of this, Jim, what are you all doing here, to coin a metaphor? Are you dancing, or have you decided it's time to leave the dance floor?
Well, we're still dancing on the floor, but we've moved closer to the exit. But as many of our listeners have know, we're not fully invested in the stock market. I mean, we're still invested in stocks, and we're more oriented towards value-type stocks, and there's been some rotations given where we think this economic cycle is going. But we've been de-risking, and that's the thing about when this thing ends, I don't know what event it's going to be. If it's going to be so much tightening in the market, it's going to be a jump in credit spreads, it's going to be a default. I don't know what that is, but they don't ring the bell at the top. And there are several things we're seeing in place that tell us, you want to be dancing, but start moving your partner closer to the exit door, because at some point it's going to happen, and I don't know what it is. So we've been getting more defensive. We own more bonds in the portfolio. We have interest rate floaters because we know the Fed keeps telling us, and I suspect Yellen's going to say the same thing when she goes on Capitol Hill next week. Every time the Fed raises interest rates, the interest rate on our floater bonds go up. So that's where we want to be. But we also are taking a barbell approach on the longer end, on the 10-year end, because rates have come down. And especially if you start to have trouble anywhere in the world, it'll gravitate towards safer assets. So usually when you are in a transition through different stages of the business cycle, you see a rotation in market leadership. And typically what happens is, as the economy starts to weaken, you start to see, for example, in the acceleration phase of an economic recovery, you see technology stocks do well, you see financial stocks do well, discretionary stocks, industrials, and materials. As you move into the latter part of an economic cycle, you still see technology, because technology companies have the ability. This is, and we're living in the age of technology. What we have not seen do as well this time, and it's been mainly because of a flattening yield curve, meaning the longer end hasn't risen as much, has been the financials. Now, they've taken off in the last week or two because passing the stress test, many of the banks, even though their profits aren't going to look that great for the second quarter, given all the things that we've read, is that it's hoping that as yields rise, banks will start making more loans and become more profitable. So far, that really hasn't happened. Energy has not taken off as is expected. It has actually weakened. Now, the discretionary stocks have done very well, And we've seen some defensive stocks do well recently, the rotation in healthcare and some of the consumer staples. And utilities have not done well here in the last couple of weeks. So you generally tend to see a rotation.
So right now, you're still invested in stocks. I'm granted more conservative in the types of stocks, and you are building a bond position to take advantage of rising rates, but you're no longer 100% in the market. Now, when we talk about problem surfacing, and so far, I think you've sort of admitted you're not exactly quite sure where they would come out, but where would you be looking?
I mean, the first place that you begin to see these problems surface, it's always in the bond market. You saw it in 1999 and 2000. You saw it again in 2007 and 2008. You saw it again in 2011 during the pig crisis. And you saw it at the end of December 2015 in the first quarter of 2016. So if problems were to surface, they're going to surface first in the bond market, as you will see credit spreads widen between high quality debt like sovereigns, AAA rated corporates, AA rated corporates, and more of the lower quality bonds like the junk bonds, very much like what we saw at the beginning of 2016. Now, right now, credit spreads have narrowed, and that means you as an investor are not getting compensated for the risk that you're taking in buying lower quality credits. It's one of the reasons why we're using interest rate floaters right now and are invested in high quality bonds. But right now, the good news is we have not seen any stress emerge in the credit markets. And the other thing that we're also seeing is the economic data is mixed. And this has been probably one of the characteristics of this economic recovery and why the Fed has waited so long and kept interest rates so low. Remember, they announced taper in May of 2013. They didn't begin until a year later, and they didn't finish until 2015. And that's because you'll see the economy pick up in the second quarter, third quarter, then it weakens in the fourth quarter, and we've actually experienced negative prints in the first quarter. So we are getting mixed economic data. The global PMI is the good news, and one of the reasons why Mark Chandler and I talked about this in the first hour is the global PMIs have picked up. And especially the Tenkan report in Japan has recently picked up. So economic activity globally is picking up. So that's a good sign. So we're seeing maybe mixed economic data here in the U.S., although economic growth in Q3 at least should be, it's not going to look like it was in Q1. So second quarter in Q3 this year are going to be better, but they're certainly not going to be as strong as in previous years. So that's our first little warning sign right there. We're still growing. The economic recovery is still in place. The unemployment rate is low, but we are starting to see signs that things are weakening. Right now, the big thing going globally is we are seeing synchronized economic growth coming out of Europe, coming out of Japan, growth in China. All of that versus in the previous years, it was mainly the U.S. market that was strong. Europe had two recessions. Japan had recessions. It went back in. Right now, the global economic growth has been strong. Well, I say the word strong, it's picked up because it's nowhere near what it was in the last decade.
Now, buried in all of this, based on everything that we have said, there's got to be some risk. So where would I find it?
Well, I mean, the Fed has been raising interest rates since 2015, and the old Edson Gould model, three steps and a stumble, hasn't applied because they have now raised rates four times. But as they do this, this is going to reduce the rate of return on invested capital. What that means is the capital investments that companies make, the return is less. At the same time as the Fed raises interest rates, the cost of capital, both in the markets, whether you're issuing equity or in the credit markets, whether you're issuing debt, starts to go up. And the end result is they are going to eventually impact profits. We're already seeing signs of that. Now, remember, first quarter profits were up in Q1. They were up 14%. But a big percentage of that was the energy industry was coming off the lows of a year earlier when the price of oil got down to $26 a barrel. So oil remained primarily in the $50 range in the first quarter. But where you're seeing the signs, and we're seeing this in what happened in the second quarter with market returns, You're seeing that with the returns on small and mid-cap stocks. So even though we've seen profits pick up in the first and they'll pick up in the second quarter, look for that to slow down. Energy was the big profit driver in Q1, and it'll be part of the driver in Q2. However, the Fed is tightening, and it's beginning to slow, and you're seeing this in a slowdown in money supply. Money supply, the best thing we can say, it still remains positive, but it's starting to slow down. Once again, another reason why you and your dance partner want to keep dancing, but start dancing closer towards the exit gates.
Well, that means that if these signs begin to emerge, you're going to see them in the credit markets just like they did in times past. But we don't see that yet anyway.
Usually, John, when you start to see this problem emerge, you will start to see it in the credit markets, and it's going to start occurring in the low-grade market. Because think about it. When the economy starts to slow down, what does that mean? Sales start to contract, profits start to contract, and this has a major impact on lower quality companies. Because if their sales start to crack, if they start to slow down, their profits start to slow down, or worse, they begin to lose money, how are they going to be able to make their debt payments, which is something certainly we saw in the energy sector with what was it, 140 energy companies that went belly up during the downturn. So eventually you're going to see these credit spreads start to widen as the return on invested capital declines and as companies pull back on investing. There's a lot of money that is sitting on the sidelines right now. And one thing that can change all of this is if miraculously the Republicans could come together, and the most immediate impact to extend this recovery would be tax cuts. Because infrastructure spending, we know it's going to take 2 or 3 years to implement that. That wouldn't be enough to save the economy. However, speculation over that would, because you would have companies start making investments anticipating the expenditures the government would start spending to do whatever they're going to do, whether it's rebuild airports, bridges, roads, dams. Goodness knows we need to spend a lot of money there. But when you do tax cuts, that puts money immediately into consumers' pocketbooks. They can spend that. When you do tax cuts with corporations, what does that do? If a corporation, instead of paying $35 on every $100 it earns, it only spends $20 in taxes, or $15, whatever that tax reduction rate tends to be, that means profits could go up 60 to 80%. That could drive the market up. So there are a number of things that can happen that can mitigate this and extend this business recovery for, let's say, another couple of years. Maybe it's 2019 before we actually get into a recession. Because even though you're getting tax cuts, what the Fed will keep doing is what they always do. They will keep raising interest rates, shrinking their balance sheet, and eventually they're going to drive the cost of capital up, and then that's going to bring the party to an end.
So I guess now we have to ask an important question here. Why are they raising interest rates if we can see clearly, I mean, theoretically, Janet Yellen wants to create some wiggle room in the air against the next recession, but if raising interest rates will actually cause the very thing that they say they're trying to avoid, why are they doing it?
Well, I think number one is the Fed runs on these economic and econometric models as if mathematics was a perfect way to run the economies. The problem is their models are flawed, which is one reason why their forecasts are wrong over 90% of the time. The other thing is the Fed has not kept up with the evolution of the financial markets. And the best example was the last financial crisis, where they talk about regulating banks, but they didn't realize the shadow banking system that rose up in its place. The other thing they still continue to this day to overlook is derivatives. On the credit side, the banks may have passed the stress test on credit and loans, but what about derivatives? Because that was where a lot of the damage took place in the financial markets, especially with the drop in Lehman that led to a domino effect. Because remember, most of the world's derivatives, the $600 trillion, whatever the amount is today, I think it's closer, a little over $600 trillion, it's held by only 10 banks. The majority of it is 10 banks. In the United States, it's just 4 banks that hold all of it. So if you need to get out of a position or you go belly up, just think what happens to the other people that have different hedges based on you. And that's exactly what we saw happen in Lehman. They think they can gradually deflate the asset bubble. And one of the catch 22 that they're in, if they don't start normalizing, we will get an asset bubble that will explode just like we did in 99 and in 2007. So they're in a catch 22. They need to normalize, because as long as you keep interest rates at zero, you're going to encourage leverage, speculation, and huge asset bubbles. So they're in a bit of a bind right now. And if we take a look at this, we are in the second highest asset market in history. So it's sort of a catch-22 thing, John, where quite honestly, and they think this is political, the Fed should have been raising interest rates in 2012. Well, what was 2012? It was a presidential election year. They should have raised interest rates more aggressively in 2016. What was 2016? A presidential election year. So now they're playing catch up. So they should have raised rates and normalized many, many years ago. One of the big critics of the Fed is they had a perfect opportunity in 2012, 13, and 14 to have begun raising interest rates, but they didn't because of, I think, four political reasons.
Well, now it's interesting, because when we talk about the Fed's models being flawed, and if we've noticed, the Fed always seems to miss the mark. Last week, Fed Chair Janet Yellen gave a speech, and she predicted we were unlikely to see a major financial crisis in our lifetime.
Would I say there will never, ever be another financial crisis? You know, probably that would be going too far, but I do think we're much safer, and I hope that it will not be in our lifetimes, and I don't believe it will be.
Okay, so there she said she doesn't believe that it's going to be in our lifetime, all right? Yeah, however, this reminds me of a similar prediction made by former Fed Chair Ben Bernanke back in 2006.
So many economists coming on our air and saying, oh, this is a bubble and it's going to burst and this is going to be a real issue for the economy. Some say it could even cause a recession at some point. What is the worst case scenario if, in fact, we were to see prices come down substantially across the country?
Well, I guess I don't buy your premise. It's a pretty unlikely possibility. We've never had a decline in house prices on a nationwide basis. So what I think is more likely is that the house prices will slow, maybe stabilize, might slow consumption spending a bit. I don't think it's going to drive the economy too far from its full employment path, though.
So would you agree with Alan Greenspan's comments recently that we've got some areas of the country that are seeing froth, not necessarily a national situation, but certainly froth in some areas?
You can see some types of speculation, investors turning over condos quickly. So those sorts of things you see in some local areas. I'm confident that the bank regulators will pay close attention to the kinds of loans that are being made, making sure that underwriting is done right. But I do think that this is mostly a localized problem and not something that's going to affect the national economy.
And that was an interview with Maria Bartiromo from way back when. You know, Jim, I'm always thinking about the pronouncements of Congress critters, too, prior to the blowout 2007-2008. No, there's nothing wrong with Fannie and Freddie. There's nothing wrong with the credit markets, blah, blah, blah. And those few voices that were trying to tell you this thing's going to go were being hooted down, shouted down, discredited, but they were right.
And that's the thing. I mean, nobody can predict. I mean, certainly if you take a look, John, at the events that we've seen in the last 17 years, from 9/11 to terrorism today to the financial crisis, we've seen so many things that have taken place that nobody could have predicted. But, you know, if you take a look at history, we've always said, and you go back to the end of World War II, every recession in bear market since World War II has been preceded by a Fed rate raising cycle. I mean, all we have to do is take the last 30, 40 years. They missed the Penn Central Bank failure in 1970. They missed the failure in bankruptcy of Franklin National. They missed the Bankhurst in Germany in 1974. They missed the Mexican peso crisis in 1982, which forced Volcker to get off his hard stance on monetary and begin loosening interest rates. They also missed the collapse of Continental Illinois in 1984. They raised interest rates precipitously way too fast in 1987, which led to the crash in October. One day, the market was down 23%. Everybody remembers that. They missed the S&L crisis in 1990. And then again, they tried it, and they doubled the Fed funds rate in 94, which led to the peso crisis in 94 and the bankruptcy of Orange County. Once again, that led in 1987 to the Asian crisis, followed by long-term capital in the Russian crisis in 98, the bursting of the tech bubble, and then once again, the financial crisis in 2007 and 2009. So if you look at this, they don't have a very good track record at landing the plane safely. They tend to crash it.
So right now, to use the analogy we used earlier on, we want to keep dancing, but as you're twirling around the floor, you're keeping an eye on the exit door because the Fed has a lousy track record of making safe landings with the airplane. They usually wind up making crash landings and going, oh, I guess something was really wrong there. And given their track record, you know, maybe we shouldn't feel too secure about that. So keep the eye on the exit.
Yeah, I mean, right now, if you want to take a look at everything, the markets are still buoyant, but keep in mind, central banks are reversing cycle. This 9-year cycle that we've seen of easy money, the ECB is talking about doing it. Bank of Japan is talking about doing it. So that is happening. It's reversing. We are also heavily leveraged, both in the economy and markets, whether it's derivatives, whether it is leverage on corporate balance sheets, or it's margin debt. The other thing that we're seeing is disruptive technology, which is changing the course of many industries, and we'll get into that in a future big picture because it is going to have an impact on what we're seeing play out in the markets, and we're also seeing aging demographics. The best news, even if we go through another bear market and an economic recession, for stock investors, think about this. With corporate buybacks, mergers, and buyouts, we no longer have a Wilshire 5000. We no longer have a Russell 2000. The amount of mid-cap and small-cap stocks that have disappeared are dropped in half. There are 50% less companies available to invest in today publicly than there were in the year 2000. So all of that eventually bodes well for stock investing going forward, despite the fact we are likely to get a bear market and recession. But right now, John, you can keep dancing, but once again, you and your partner move closer to the exit door.
You're listening to the Financial Sense News Hour at financialsense.com. To speak to Jim Poplava or his financial planning team, call us toll-free at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. We'd be glad to help you plan your customized investment portfolio.
You know, Financial Sense News Hour listeners should remember that our premium members are able to hear the weekday Financial Sense News Hour featuring interviews with top economic commentators and experts. If you're not a member, here's one of the interviews you missed this week.
Andrew Zatlin from Moneyball Economics joins us today. He's a top-ranked forecaster for economic data. And Andrew, I want to ask you about your VICE index because it looks like it's seeing a bit of a downdraft and is giving a sign that maybe we're going to see a slowdown with consumer spending in the broader U.S. economy. What are your thoughts on this? And if you wouldn't mind, give us an update on where things are currently.
VICE index has rolled over. It is on its back. And again, let's recap what that is. That's alcohol, gambling, prostitution, and drugs. These are not essentials. These are the wants. This is when you've got money in your pocket. What makes this particular set of spending so important and so sensitive is that it's all cash-based, right? You can't use a credit card. You can't get a line of credit. And so this is the first place where spending is going to slow down. It's, do I have money in my pocket right now and tomorrow? Then you get to the next level of spending, more of the luxury goods, but you know, just the general stuff, going out to movies, going out to steak dinners. You can put that on your credit card and you can move that out a couple of months. So this is why it makes it so sensitive. It's cash based. And what we're seeing is it's crashed. And typically this is 4 to 5 months leading for regular retail consumer spending. So if it's crashing now, it really implies that not just right now are people retrenching, but we're going to start seeing this show up in the broader economy roughly by September, October.
And welcome back to the Financial Sense News Hour. Jim Poplava, John Loeffler here with you. You must admit, if you have been watching things out there, that this year is turning out much differently, much more differently? I get differenter. There we go. Much differenter than expected. Let's look at it. Oil was expected to go up due to cuts in OPEC production. It's actually come down and it's right back in bear market territory again. Rates that were expected to rise have actually fallen. The dollar, which was expected to rise against other currencies, has fallen. So nothing so far has turned out the way it was expected, but it has actually turned out well, surprisingly so. So, Jim, I guess given all of the unexpectations, what has this market been drinking?
Well, I think, John, it's once again, two things going on in the market. Where are you going to get growth? Number two, where are you going to get yield? So if you're an institution or a pension plan, you know, like CalPERS, they're assuming a 7% return. Where are you going to get that? You certainly aren't going to get that in treasuries at 2% or in German bonds at 0.5%. So they've been chasing in the market. And despite the Fed raising interest rates, remember the ECB is still going through quantitative easing, the Bank of England, the Bank of Japan. So we're still running on a sea of liquidity. The second factor that has come in, we'll call this the Trump rally, as the markets took off after the election of President Trump, they were expecting four things to happen. They were expecting, number one, the repeal of Obamacare, which has not happened and is still in trouble. Secondly, they were expecting tax cuts. And third, they were expecting big bucks to be spent on infrastructure. And then finally, deregulation. Well, if you look what's happened, the only thing that the president has been able to do is get deregulation. Obamacare, or its repeal and replacement, is bogged down in the Senate, and there is dissension among the Democrats. They don't have the votes to pass it. And they need to pass it to get to tax cuts. And even when it comes to tax cuts, there's disagreement on whether there's going to be a border adjustment tax. They've already changed how much they were going to lower the income tax. It was going to lower from 39.6 down to 33. Now it's at 35. So there's disagreements there. And we also know when it comes to infrastructure, even if they were to pass it in the first year, it would take 2 or 3 years to implement it. When Obama passed his bill in 2009, 3, 4 years later, they hadn't spent the money. So the market is running on a lot of expectations and high hopes, and they're getting nothing. So a lot of that is going on. And, you know, there has been deregulation. We've seen that. So I guess, you know, if you want to say if there's something good, at least we've seen those kind of things. But outside of that, there really hasn't been much. What has been fueling this market has been liquidity and the lowest interest rates in history. I mean, where are you going to go if you want money? If you want to earn a decent return, are you going to go out 30 years on a 30-year treasury for less than 3%? Are you going to buy a German bond at 0.5% for 10 years? Or if you want to stay in short-term bonds, are you going to pay the government to loan them money? So where else are you going to go? So outside of deregulation, nothing has happened. But despite all these things, the market has shrugged it off.
But as you point out, Jim, despite that, it's a pretty good year.
Well, I mean, if we take a look, let's talk about the major averages. The Dow is up 8.36 as of this Friday. The S&P is up 8.32, and the NASDAQ technology stocks, the big winner, that's where a lot of the FANG stocks, it's up 16.3%. But this has been a large cap driven market because it's those large caps that make up the big indexes because they're market cap weighted in the S&P or the NASDAQ or price weighted as they are in the Dow. But if you look at the smaller cap stocks, the S&P small cap index is only up 2% for the year. The Value Line Arithmetic Index is up less than 2. It's up barely over 100. If you look at the Russell 2000, it's up 4%, and the S&P mid cap only 5%. So we have a saying in the market, the generals are marching up the hill, but the troops aren't following.
And then you have questions about the bond market, too, because everybody expected, what, 3% interest rates on 10-year bonds, but we're really only at 2.
Yeah, I mean, if we look at this Friday, 2-year notes, they're holding up. They're close to 1.4%, reflecting the market's already telling you that they expect another rate hike. 10-year bond yields have been rising. They got down last week down to 2.1. This Friday, we're closer to 2.4, 30 years are at 2.9. But we're starting to see yields rise in Europe, especially a big rise in yield, which explains a lot of what we've seen in the dollar. Italian bond yields are actually just slightly below treasuries at 2.3. You've got Japanese bond yields are up less than 0.1%, but they're not negative. Spanish bond yields are 1.7 and UK gilts are at 1.3. So, you know, we still have low interest rates, which is one of the reasons why we're seeing these gains in the market. Where are you going to go? Are you going to invest in two-year treasuries at 1.4? I mean, you can go into Dow stocks and get 2.2, or utility stocks get 4%, or go into other stocks and getting 4 and 5. So this is what's driving the market. I would say the one big change this year is that we are seeing the international markets come alive as economies improve.
So if we're looking at the stock markets for the quarter, who would you say the winners are?
Well, I mean, for the second quarter and for year to date, it has been South Korea, which is amazing given all the stuff that's happening in North Korea. The Hang Seng market, the Hong Kong market, was number two, and it's number two year to date. Next to that is S&P Healthcare for the quarter. It was up 6.7%. Taiwan was up 6. The Nikkei, Japan's economy is actually beginning to improve. There's an undervalued stock market. The Nikkei up about 6%. Not as much for year to date, but it was a star during the quarter. The Dow Transports turning alive, coming back up 5% during the quarter. And then we had the NASDAQ composite up about 4% and the S&P up about 3.8%. Now, where things have been somewhat negative is Europe. France's market was down during the quarter. So was London, IBEX, the Euro Stock Index, the Shanghai Index, and some of the South American markets were down. And of course, a big loser here in the U.S. has been the energy index, which is surprising because the biggest profits during the first quarter in the second quarter has actually been the energy industry, but people aren't buying it. Sentiment in energy is the negative I've actually seen.
So far, we're looking at markets. What else did well during the second quarter?
Well, if we take a look at commodities, generally, the ags have absolutely been on fire. Lean hogs were up 38%. Wheat is up 27%. Cattle up 11%. I hate to tell you, folks, your beef prices have gone up. Have you been to the market lately and taken a look what a fillet cost or a steak? Corn was up 8%, gold was up 6, cotton up 6, copper up 6, platinum. But silver had a negative quarter, soybeans were down, coffee, gasoline, cocoa, diesel, crude oil, natural gas, sugar, and orange juice. So when it comes to the commodities, it's mainly been grains and beef.
All of which, of course, means that commodities are not doing well, unless I think the one exception to that is if you're in ags. Currencies are the one that have my attention, though, because everybody thought the dollar was going to go up because the Fed was raising interest rates at a time when everybody else was going down, and they were somewhat disappointed.
Well, I mean, now here's the one that probably surprised everybody because, you know, all the thing about building the wall coming from Trump and immigration, there was a lot of negative sentiment on the Mexican peso, but that was the number one currency in the quarter. The Mexican peso is up 14%. The Polish zloty is up 13%. The Czech koruna is up 12%. So some of the peripheral countries are doing very well in Europe. And of course, the euro itself is up 9%. A lot of this reflects an increase in economic activity and improvement, which is another reason that a currency can go up.
And reiterating what I said earlier, it seems that everything that was predicted turned out to be just the opposite. Oil is down. It was supposed to be going up. The dollar is down. It was supposed to be going up. Interest down. Supposed to be going up. But the stock market is up. So what? Party? Can we still do that?
Well, I mean, once again, they don't ring the bell at the top. What I think that we're seeing here, what's concerning is we have not seen the small caps rise. As I mentioned, the S&P small cap index is up only 2%. The value line arithmetic index is up a little over 1%. So it's mainly been the large cap and the generals, which you usually see towards the end of a bull market. Now, whether that will continue, we still don't know. And what could change everything once again would be all of a sudden, if we do get the things the market was looking for, they repeal Obamacare and replace it. We get tax cuts is probably the most immediate, both at the corporate end and individual end, would be a very positive for the market. And that could extend this rally and this market.
Yeah, and if you look at what's going on right now, there has been such a focus on especially the part of the media. That's what all this war is going on, this spat between President Trump and CNN, among other things, to pull down his presidency. As a matter of fact, they didn't even offer him the normal courtesy that media do. You know, usually there's a honeymoon period for 4 to 6 months before they jump in and begin becoming critical of the president. But what's happening is we're being distracted by a lot of that, which, remember, you talked about failing predictions. The accusations, allegations are collapsing one right behind the other. You know, the Russian allegations and everything. It's draining off a huge amount of political attention to those issues, which are turning out to be non-issues rather than the things that need to get done. And so as far as any kind of tax reform, the repeal and replace of Obamacare, anything that you would anticipate happening in the political scene is not happening and probably won't happen before year end. It's an interesting situation because there are things going on we need to be paying attention to.
Well, there is. But once again, I mean, this has been a year full of surprises. So we may be surprised again with this president. And all of a sudden, the Republicans realize that they ran on getting these things done. John, what are they going to do in 2018 when they say we hold the White House, we hold both houses of Congress, and we got nothing done? It seems somewhere down the road, somebody's got to be thinking this is not going to bode well for them in 2018. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are, but what do you think? If we don't get tax reform, repeal Obamacare, don't get infrastructure, and we're still talking about Russia or something like that, and the Republicans get nothing done, what do you think is going to happen in 2018?
Well, that's the real coin toss, because the real question is, some people say President Trump's base is eroding. Others say the nonsense is actually galvanizing his base. And as you have pointed out, Jim, presidents, well, Chris, this won't be a presidential election year, but nevertheless, it'll affect the election. But presidents rise and fall on interest rates. And that was something that President Clinton had to learn the hard way as well, that this either makes or breaks a presidency. So he is really swimming upstream. He's swimming upstream against a stiff political opposition, stiff media opposition, and against the actions of the Fed. So what that's going to do in the 2018 elections, I mean, I'm not a prophet, so to speak. I can't really say at this stage of the game.
Well, the one thing, as we pointed out in our forecast at the beginning of the year, as we took a look at things that were happening in the market, President Trump is the first president since George W. Bush that enters his first year in the presidency with the economy, number one, not in a recession, and the Fed not lowering interest rates. Instead, he's entering his first year in office in a late business cycle and the Fed going through a tightening cycle. The last president that happened to ended up in a recession and didn't get reelected, and that was George H. Bush. So what we do know, this is a president that surprises in many ways. So this thing could turn. But anyway, the way you made money in the markets in the second quarter of the year was to be in stocks, with international stocks outperforming domestic stocks, with technology and healthcare some of the big winners here in the U.S.
Okay, so, you know, there's where we are in the market and everything else. What do we do now?
Well, the one thing I think you don't want to do is be chasing a lot of these high-priced stocks, because unless you're very astute at trading and watching the charts, I would be looking for value. I'd be looking for things that do more of your value stocks, that represent something with a good dividend, a strong balance sheet, and something that is underpriced compared to the rest of the market. I wouldn't be chasing it. And certainly, I wouldn't be 100% invested in the stock market at this point. But once again, we're not near the end of the cycle, so I think this has further to go.
Well, as I mentioned to Ryan Poplava at the beginning of the program, this has really been an interesting year. You really do have to admit that from a coverage standpoint. Coming up next week, let's see, we've got earnings from second quarter. Fed Chair Janet Yellen's going to be on Capitol Hill. That's always a popcorn moment, as I say. You pop some popcorn and flop down and watch what's going on. And we could probably do a comparison someday between Janet Yellen, Ben Bernanke, and Alan Greenspan and think, say who we thought was more colorful.
Well, you remember, Greenspan was always confusing. He talked in greenspeak, as they said. He would always testify. They would ask him questions, and you would kind of scratch your head and go, what did he say? Bernanke was big on communication. In fact, he was the one that started the press conferences and everything. So he told you kind of like he was the pilot that tells you way too much. Yellen is more dull and I would say very cautious. So it'll be interesting to see what happens because there's speculation that she may not get appointed next year, that Trump may appoint somebody else. So they want to get going the unwinding of the balance sheet and get that rolling because her predecessor may not go the same. Already, you do have some dissent within the Fed about raising interest rates and a few of them that are saying, wait a minute, inflation is going down, not up where we predicted. The economy is not that robust. And we know sooner or later, stocks don't always go up. So I think they've been able to do this because the stock market has been strong. Whether they do it going forward or change their mind, I think once again, John, we live in, I hate to say it, a data-dependent world, and that data can change, as we've seen so many times the last 9 years, can change at a moment's notice. We could be in a different environment.
And that means no shortage of things to talk about, and that means Yellen will be yelling on Capitol Hill, and we'll see what it is she has to say.
So on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, once again, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense News Hour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.